Welcome to season four of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr.
Let's do it.
In this season, I unpack the key stories and lessons from my book, Raise Your Game. High performance secrets from the best of the best. If you've already read or listened to my book, please enjoy the reinforcement and reminders. Remember, repetition is not punishment. If this is all new to you, I hope you find this content helpful. You can order the full audiobook at audible.com or wherever audiobooks are sold. You can also order the paperback or hard copy version for you or your entire team or organization at raiseyourgamebook.com. Before I dive in, I wanted to announce that Your Game Plan, Student Athlete Edition, is coming soon. This online course was strategically designed by me to help middle school, high school, and college athletes improve their leadership, communication, and habits, as well as become the best version of themselves on and off the court or field. Here are a few samples of the lessons taught. I've got dozens and dozens of favorite quotes, but if I had to pick one, it would be, are the habits you have today on par for the dreams you have for tomorrow? And I actually said that in kind of an impromptu talk one time at a basketball camp, and it's now hanging in the training facility of Penn State's football team, which is really a cool and neat honor. So the quote's gotten a little bit of recognition. But the most important part of that quote is, you have to have alignment between what you do every single day and what your goals and dreams are. The first thing you need to do is take a deep breath and realize that no matter what this adversity is, at some point it will pass. And I know that's easy to say and not very easy to do, but I'm hoping what it does is reframe your perspective and give you a little bit of optimism. Now, clearly, there's a wide range of adversities for student athletes. This could be something on the smaller acute level. You know, you get a D on a history test that you really studied hard for. It could be something, you know, a little bit higher stakes. You know, you sprained your ankle in practice and you may have to miss Friday's game. And it could be anything in between. But whatever the adversity is, first and foremost, you have to realize that you do have the strength to get past it, that it will eventually pass, and hopefully that optimism and a sense of poise can lead to some of the other steps. And make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Alan Stein Jr., or keep listening to the rest of this season for more info. In today's episode, we explore Chapter 10 from the coach section, which focuses on empowerment. At Apple, we hire people to tell us what to do, not the other way around. Steve Jobs. Empowerment is the last chapter of part two because it is the final piece. If you are a leader with character who serves his people, who has a healthy culture in place and a vision for what the team should be, then you have to take the last step, empower them to action. Like parenting, you do what you can to foster, nurture, and inspire, but then you have to let go. Think back on Steve Kerr's Warriors team, a fully empowered group of players who are trusted by their coach. Leaders may set the destination, but not necessarily the path. A leader's primary job is to find out what the team member does really well and how to best utilize that skill set for the team's benefit. A coach, any kind of coach, must be comfortable giving his people a sense of independence, trusting they will figure out the best way to get where they need to go. Empowering your people is a way of connecting with them, building their confidence, and showing your belief in them. That feeling spreads. No matter the arena, people are happiest when they're growing, learning, and improving. Happiness, according to researchers, is about purpose and productivity. Effective leaders give their people an opportunity to be of use and to matter. Then everyone wins. Player coaches. In sports, the best coaches aren't those breathing down necks, and they are never the micromanagers. They are leaders like Kerr and the Celtics' Brad Stevens, who carry themselves with confidence because they trust their system, the culture they created, and the people they have chosen. Empowerment is the natural extension of everything that has already been put into place. Michigan State's men's basketball coach Tom Izzo once told me, a player-led team will always outperform a coach-led team. Coming from a coach, especially a coach of young men, that might give you pause. Wouldn't a coach want to be the focal point? Wouldn't he need to be? But of course, Izzo knows what he's talking about. If it's a player-coach team, he told me, that means they've taken ownership of themselves and their team, and your chances of success triple. Coming from one of the winningest coaches of all time, that's an impactful lesson. It doesn't mean he doesn't value his job or position. He just knows that the strongest thing a leader can do is empower his players to run their own team. Izzo told me, I think we spend so much time preparing for our opponents, we don't spend enough time preparing for ourselves, which he called self-scouting. Part of that process is knowing everyone. You've got to spend time with kids to get them to trust you, he said. He makes a point of bringing back his star players to meet with his current team, and the concept hasn't left them. They return to team coach, the culture of our team. True leadership isn't about naked power. It's about being open to giving, spreading, and sharing that power. Leadership is not a one-way relationship. It requires buy-in from the other side, and people choose to buy in when they feel a sense of autonomy and control. Authority is the open heart. Power is the closed fist. Michael Foley, author. Getting out of your own way. Empowerment is intimately tied to the very first trait discussed in this book, self-awareness. As a leader, you must know what you can and cannot do. You have the vision to hire others who can help you succeed, the character and commitment to serve them, and you've created the culture where they can thrive and lean on each other. Now it's time to let them do their thing. If you do everything else, but then you don't let go, you are basically shooting yourself in the foot. Virgin founder and CEO Richard Branson is a huge proponent of empowerment. He specifically relies on it so he can free up himself to focus on his vision. People should delegate early on in their businesses so they can start thinking about the bigger picture, he told an interviewer. When he meets with budding young entrepreneurs, he tells them to go and take a week out to find somebody as good or better than yourself. Let them get on and run your business day to day. Hire those who do what you can't and let them do it. If you could have done it all yourself, you would have. Simply giving employees a sense of agency, a feeling that they are in control, that they have genuine decision-making authority, can radically increase how much energy and focus they bring to their jobs, wrote Robert Bruce Shaw, who assists executives in building teams. Think about all the jobs you ever had. Which were the ones you liked best? Weren't they the ones where you were free to do the most? Didn't that freedom make you enjoy the work? Didn't that let you know your boss trusted you? Weren't you happier at that job? Trusting your people. Delegation is something all kinds of coaches, even good coaches, struggle with. One reason is that they find it hard to trust that others can perform specific tasks as well as they can. They convince themselves that it will take longer to either teach someone else how to do it or, worse, have to fix it after they do. This is a very limiting belief system and one that can paralyze growth and infect the team culture. Elite leaders understand the power of delegation from three vantage points. Number one, delegation unconsciously tells your people that you trust them, and trust is the glue to all relationships and cultures. Hovering over an employee's shoulder sends a message, I'm not sure I can depend on you. Number two, the only way to learn is to do. Delegating gives people the vital reps they need to improve and grow. If you never give them an opportunity to do it on their own, they will never actualize their potential. Then their inability is not their fault. It's yours. Number three, delegating frees you up to do things that only the coach can do. The more time a coach spends doing work that other members of the team can do, the slower the progress of the entire team. Taking charge. The true test of a great leader is revealed not in what he does, but what his people do without him. How does your team act when you're not there? How much slippage would there be if you took the week off? It takes tremendous security and confidence for a leader to hand off the reins, but it's vital. In his book, Extreme Teams, Why Pixar, Netflix, Airbnb, and Other Cutting-Edge Companies Succeed Where Most Fail, Robert Bruce Shaw examined companies that make a point of empowering employees. He pointed to a study of a manufacturing plant where the productivity increased 20% in 2 months, a colossal jump. The radical idea? The company let its employees have agency over seemingly minor things like shift schedules and uniforms. That dose of freedom led to a happier and more productive workforce. And the numbers proved it. Great companies, the visionary ones, have caught on to this idea. Pick an area where your people are frustrated, wrote former Google VP Laszlo Bock, and let them fix it. If there are constraints, limited time or money, tell them what they are. Be transparent with your people and give them a voice in shaping your team or company. You'll be stunned by what they accomplish. Even in its early days, when Google was living in the gigantic shadow of Microsoft, the company practiced empowerment. Its founders were committed to hiring the very best engineers we could and then getting out of the way. Micromanaging might give the boss a feeling of control, but it will suck away the employee's will to do their best. They will find somewhere else soon enough, a place that gives some autonomy with a boss who's comfortable giving it. If a coach truly wants the organization to thrive, and not just himself to thrive, then he should want free thinkers. He should seek out those who aren't afraid to challenge his point of view. As the saying goes, if everyone on your team is thinking alike, then someone isn't thinking. Allow for disagreements. Create an environment where subordinates are free to speak their minds. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, along with his executives, has consistently encouraged openness and honesty with little concern for where someone is in the hierarchy. It has served the company well. Netflix accounts for about a third of the internet bandwidth in the United States. Former Netflix executive Patty McCord explained the company's mindset in a Forbes interview. All hiring should be based on starting with a problem you have to solve and what it's going to take somebody to be great at solving it. Once the right people are on board, don't meddle and don't saddle them with unnecessary rules that do little but hinder them from shining. Serve them by trusting them. Orchestra conductors don't lead by playing every instrument. They lead by trusting everyone will properly play theirs. You can't force your will on people. If you want them to act differently, you need to inspire them to change themselves. Phil Jackson. The Sage. Phil Jackson has 11 rings as an NBA coach, and though some, the haters and the misinformed, might think that having Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and Shaquille O'Neal just automatically produces championships, the players themselves know differently. Jordan had been a Chicago Bull for 7 years before the team even made it to the finals, but Jackson had been their head coach for only two. In 1990, before the Bulls had won any championships, Jackson knew that Jordan would have to buy into the team concept if they were ever going to win a title. Instead of berating or lecturing Jordan on the importance of his teammates' success, Jackson let Jordan's own thinking do the work. "I treated him like a partner," Jackson wrote, and slowly he began to shift his way of thinking. "When I let him solve the problem himself, he was more likely to buy into the solution." That's the essence of empowerment. Jackson discovered that the more I tried to exert power directly, the less powerful I became. I learned to dial back my ego and distribute power as widely as possible without surrendering final authority. He took control by releasing control, a Zen-like concept that Jackson brought to the rest of his coaching. For example, it is common practice when the other team goes on a 6-0 run, the coach calls timeout. But not Jackson. He liked letting his team figure their way out of trouble on their own, fostering a feeling that they could. It's a formidable example of empowerment, the kind that leads to trust, self-confidence, and autonomy, all the things that championship teams need. In 1999, after Jackson became head coach of the Lakers, he brought that same approach to Los Angeles in order to get a young, brash Kobe Bryant to trust and empower his teammates. The empowerment that Jackson implemented with his team spread all the way down the tree. He empowered Jordan, who empowered teammates Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, and the rest of the starters, and then all the way down the bench. Jackson empowered Kobe, who empowered Shaq to make his own decisions and his Laker teammates to find their own roles in the system. At the top of the pyramid was a coach who was committed to not acting like he was on the top of the pyramid. He let everyone feel on top of their own pyramid. If your manager knows what you're doing all of the time, you're not doing your job, and neither is he. Hugh Evans, Sony executive. The soul-sucking meeting. We will continue to hold these meetings until we figure out why no work is getting done. Sound familiar? Many businesses spend way too much time in meetings. There are people holding meetings to plan other meetings. And too many of them start late, run long, quickly go off topic, and offer no value or have no agenda. One way to empower your employees is to respect their time. Cut down on the meetings and limit them to who needs to be there. An article in the Harvard Business Review noted, meetings have increased in length and frequency over the past 50 years, to the point where executives spend an average of nearly 23 hours a week in them, up from less than 10 hours in the 1960s. And that doesn't even include all of the impromptu gatherings that don't make it onto the schedule. This is not an effective use of anyone's time. Harvard Business Review surveyed 182 senior managers from a range of industries and concluded the following. 65% said meetings kept them from completing their own work. 71% said meetings are unproductive and inefficient. 64% said meetings come at the expense of deep thinking. 62% said meetings miss opportunities to bring the team closer together. Considering time is our most valuable resource, these meetings are being held at an astronomical price. Every minute spent in an unproductive meeting is a minute not being invested in purposeful work. With so much time being drained by meetings, most executives and employees feel they have to come to work early, stay late, and use weekends to get things done. Besides being a drain on productivity and morale, it builds resentment among the group. Here are three tips for executives and managers to treat meetings like a seasoned basketball coach uses timeouts. Number one, only call them when absolutely necessary. College basketball coaches get a finite number of timeouts at the beginning of every game, 4 75-second full timeouts and 2 30-second timeouts. So they must use them strategically and call them only when they really need to. Choose your battles wisely. If you're trying to take everything on, your team will tune you out. The refrigerator in your kitchen always makes noise, so you no longer hear it. Don't become a refrigerator. Number two, be direct, purposeful, and time conscious. When you have only 30 to 75 seconds to meet, you must be direct and purposeful. You don't have a choice. Give your team the necessary information and instruction they need to elevate their performance. No fluff. Respect the fact that their time is just as valuable as yours. Number three, make sure they leave with confidence and direction. End every meeting in the emotional state you want your people in for whatever they're doing next, which should almost always be positive, optimistic, and confident. End meetings on a high note, as that is what they will remember and bring back to their work. Who are you producing? The job of a coach is not to compile a group of yes men who will boost his ego and insulate him from criticism. The truly transcendent leader is interested in creating other leaders. It's not about manipulation or control or feeding one person's sense of self. It's about giving rise to independent thinkers and free actors and people who will develop the skills to one day be leaders themselves. If those working for you aren't constantly up for promotion or headhunted by other companies and competitors, then you're probably not developing your people. Former San Francisco 49ers head coach Bill Walsh, pioneer of the West Coast offense, still popular in the NFL, was a legend not just for the wins he produced, but for the people he produced. According to Superbosses, author Sidney Finkelstein, Walsh dispensed with an authoritarian style of leadership and empowered individuals by teaching them to think independently. The evidence is inarguable, virtually unprecedented. Walsh produced other leaders at an astounding rate. Walsh's family tree is unmatched in professional sports. In a span of 36 years, between 1979 and 2015, Walsh and the head coaches that once worked under him had a total of 32 Super Bowl appearances and 17 championships. His legacy continued long after he left the game. As of 2008, the year after Walsh's death, coaches trained by Walsh led 26 of the league's 32 teams. There are parallels elsewhere, in business and in tech. One of the most famed groups of 21st century entrepreneurs is jokingly referred to as the PayPal Mafia. Early on, PayPal employed many future founders and CEOs, including Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, and Reid Hoffman, along with the founders of YouTube and Yelp and many others. Coincidence? Of course not. It's like saying the success of Walsh's proteges is a coincidence. PayPal famously had a culture of independent thinking and empowerment, one that encouraged its members to hold fast to their vision and ideas, and it paid off in the billions. What went on inside that company planted the seeds for the tech revolution we're still living in, and it's all because the members were empowered. The dad perspective. Empowerment is one of those characteristics that spread from sports to work to our personal and family lives. As a father, empowering my children is always at the forefront of my mind. It's one of the primary pillars of my parenting philosophy. This stems from the age-old adage of, give a man a fish and he will eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he will eat for a lifetime. I teach my children certain skills and traits, model them, and then quickly empower them to use them and practice them on their own. Even when they were very young, I empowered my children to make as many of their own decisions as possible, things like what to wear and what to eat. When we're at a store or at a restaurant, I empower them to ask the clerk what they're looking for or tell the waitress what they'd like to eat. It is my goal for them to feel comfortable making decisions, not to shy away from them. I want them to constantly feel, I can do this. This will only increase as they get older and they have to make bigger decisions. College, work, relationships. Hopefully by that time, they will have had plenty of practice and will feel prepared to make the choices that are right for them. Getting back on D. Sports are a great vessel to teach empowerment because the boss, the head coach, is literally not allowed in the game. He has to empower. On a basketball court, the point guard, who is the court leader, takes the ball up the court and has it in his hands most of the time. It is imperative that he keeps the other four guys involved. If a player is not getting a chance to score on the offensive end, he loses motivation on the defensive end. It's such a fact of basketball that you can see it at the professional level. More touches of the ball leads to more commitment on defense. Vasu Kulkarni, CEO of sports analytics company Crossover and Courtside VC, is one of the biggest basketball junkies I know. As a point guard, Vasu told me, I'm all about deferring. You'll never see me looking to score first, and I believe unconsciously the same thing happens when running a company. I try to defer every decision to another manager because it makes them feel involved, makes them think harder, work harder, because they have a say in how things go. It comes down to giving your people a sense of ownership. Everyone needs to get a piece, and once they do, they'll commit. The reason? Because their own success is intimately tied up with the group's. That's how a leader turns a collection of individuals into a team. Key point. Successful leaders trust the car they built, and they are comfortable delegating and letting others lead. Remember, a measurement of a true leader is to see if he is producing other high-quality leaders. Empowering others creates buy-in. It gives them a vested interest in the mission. It takes tremendous security, trust, and confidence for a leader to hand the reins off, but it's vital. Empowerment is the opposite of micromanaging. Leaders grow by allowing others to lead, grow, and thrive. Here's a self-test, a leadership audit. Before beginning part three, complete this audit. Which of the five traits in this part would you most like to improve? Pick either one habit you can start maintaining or one habit you can rid yourself of to improve that specific trait. Focus on either starting the positive behavior or stopping the negative behavior for approximately 60 days. Ask three specific people to hold you accountable to doing so. At the end of 60 days, see if you've developed a new habit that effectively addresses this issue. Try it all again with another habit.
Well, that's it for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to join my conversations at Alan Stein Jr. on all major social platforms and go to alansteinjr.com to subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.